ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Good. We invite everyone to come a little closer if you can. There's lots of gaps there. Come on in tighter. Okay. Today we're looking at Canto 7 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 13, The Behavior of a Perfect Person. And it's text 24. Trishnaya Baba Vahinya Yogyai Kamayar Apuryaya Karmani Karyamano Hung Nana Yonishu Yojittaha Trishnaya Baba Vahinya Yogyai Kamayar Apuryaya Karmani Karyamano Hung Nana Yonishu Yojitaha Trishnaya Baba Vahinya Yogyai Kamayar Apuryaya Karmani Karyamano Hung Nana Yonishu Yojitaha. Krishnaya Baba Hinya. Puryaya. Karmani Karyamano Hung. Nana Yonishu Yojitaha. Krishnaya Baba Vahinya Yogyai Kamayar Apuryaya Anohang Nana Yonishi Yojitaha Krishnaya Baba Vahinya Yogyai Kamayar Apuryaya Karmani Karyamano Hung Nana Yonishu Yojitaha Ninya Yogyai Kamayar Apuryaya Kani Karyamano Hung Yanami Shriyojita Trishnaya Baba Vahinya Yogyai Kamayar Apuryaya Karmani Karyamano Hung Nani Yoni Shriyojita Vaishnavis. Now, right. Trishnaya. Because of material desires. Baba Vahinya. Under the sway of the material laws of nature. Yogyahai. As it is befitting. Kamahai, by material desires. Apuryaya, without end. One after another. Karmani, activities. Karyamanaha, constantly being compelled to perform. Aham, I. Nana Yonishu, in various forms of life.
Yojittaha.
Engaged in the struggle for existence. And translation. Because of insatiable material desires, I was being carried away by the waves of material nature's laws. And thus I was engaging in different activities, struggling for existence in various forms of life. Please repeat. Because of insatiable material desires, I was being carried away by the waves of material nature's laws. And thus I was engaging in different activities, struggling for existence in various forms of life. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I'm going to charade this out, so I'll leave a blank and you can fill in the words. Just want to get you more involved. As long as the living entity wants to fulfill various types of material desire, he must continuously change from one body to accept another. Vishwanath, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that a small piece of grass falls, please don't cheat, in a river and is tossed about with different types of wood and tree branches. The living entity floats in the ocean of material existence and is dashed and tossed amidst material conditions. This is called the struggle for existence. One kind of fruitive activity causes the living being to take one form of body, and because of actions performed in that body, another body is created. Good. One must therefore stop these material activities, and the chance to do so is given in the human form of life. Now you're getting it. Specifically, our energy to act should be before marriage, engaged. One should be engaged in the service of the Lord. For then, materialistic activities will automatically stop. One must fulfill one's desires by surrendering unto the Supreme Lord, for He knows how to fulfill them. Even though one may have material desires, one should there engage in the devotional service of the Lord. That will purify one's struggle for existence. Akama sarvakamova mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajetu purushang param. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole. Okay. the personality of God. And that's from the Bhagavatam. That's from the second canto, chapter 3, text 10. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma jina vritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti rutama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. And that's a quote from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11. Thank you very much for helping me with the purport. Okay, so what we're looking at here is the words of a sadhu, a holy person, who's a little bit on the obese side, and he's spending a lot of time just sort of hanging around and accepting whatever is coming his own way, in the way of food or entertainment, whatever may excite a person who's a sadhu. And he's talking to the dear Prahlad Maharaj, who we always think of Prahlad Maharaj as a little bacha, a little kid, but actually he's now grown and he's got lots of kingly experiences. He's been ruling for a while, taking up administrational tasks and duties, but still at the same time there's still so much to learn. You can never say that I've learned everything, I know it all. Have you ever met people who know it all? They know everything. We call them Mr. Know-it-alls, and they're miserable to be with. You know, you almost like want to say, thank you very much, Bhagawan. It's been a pleasure meeting you. Okay. But life is like that. It's a situation where you've never learned anything. There's still more things to learn from. So Prahlad took this humble position, and he heard about this famous sadhu, and he thought, let me go and take a humble position. Now, a king represents the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the Vedic perspective, right? That's how the structure lays out. That the king represents God, especially if he's following through with Dharma. He enforces Dharma. He lives by the codes of Dharma and so on like that. Prahlad Maharaj, it is assumed that he has done these things. After all, he's highlighted in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna identifies him as a very special person. He says, amongst the daityas, I am Prahlad. No? Not that he is a daitya, meaning a demon. But actually, he was a great soul. He stuck out. Chanakya Pandit talks about in a garden. When you come in the garden at different seasons, there's always one prominent plant that stands out in terms of its stature, in terms of its smell and so on like that, isn't it? And you go, you walk by that same garden, and then that flowering object, whatever was there, was so prominent. Now it's on its way, it's waning now, and another one takes over. And the smell is effervescent and it takes over. So amongst the Daitya family, the family of the Asuras, Prahlad sticks out. He sticks out like a sore thumb. He was very different from his father and the rest of the clan because he was very saintly. And Prahlad Maharaj took the humble position that even though he's older, very experienced, I still have things to learn. So what are we learning here from the sadhu, who we sometimes call the Python Man? He was saying, because of insatiable material desires, I was being carried away. This example of being carried away is a nice analogy that there's an image of this in the Bhagavad Gita. Even a person who's quite intelligent, he may be taken away by the boat. like a boat is swept away by the wind, by Vayu. Vayu is a very powerful force. And just like when Srila Prabhupada, this first winter in New York City, there was, it was 1966, in January, I believe it was January, and there was a storm like New York hadn't seen for decades. You know, a snow had piled up to a second story level, and the wind was going at an incredible velocity, and so on. Like the wind does amazing things, you know. In fact, the way it's described, the wind was practically sweeping people off their feet, causing them to fall. And the wind has the power to move many things like seeds. It'll take seeds from a plant and toss it off into another area. In North America, I guess in Europe too, maybe here in India, we have this plant, it's called, the milkweed. And it forms like a pod like this, it's a little bit like that. And then when it gets a little more mature, it dries up and it opens up, and in it are little many, many seeds, black seeds. And they are, they are lifted out, they're carried out by a little bit of like parachutes almost, like little fluff pieces, white. And when the wind does come, it'll take those seeds and toss them way off into another area where now new milkweeds will be planted somewhere else, you know. So the wind is very powerful. In fact, Krishna also identifies himself as the wind in the Bhagavad Gita. In one way you can say, what doesn't Krishna identify with? So he says, of purifiers I am the wind. I remember our leading devotee in Canada at the time when I was a new brahmachari, Jagadish. We were all going on Sankirtan together on one of the main streets in Canada and distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. And we would stay for hours and hours outside, even in the winter when it was quite cold. It gets like that in Canada. And so somebody would deliver the prasadam, which was nice khichdi and chapatis and so on. It was very welcoming to see the prasadam truck. We were always very happy after hours being on the street. And it just so happened that, like in those days, nobody had containers of water. Nobody ever sold bottles of water. That came in the early 80s, or late 70s, I'd say. Even in India, there was no Bisleri water. You had to take water from the pump or a tap and take your chance. And those who were foreigners, not living in India, for sure they would get sick from the water. So, thanks to Bisleri, Krishna's come in the form of that kind of water. But anyways, I can remember Jagadish, he finished eating, and of course, there was a little bit of haldi in there in the fingers and everything. Tried his best to wipe it clean. Then he opened the window, and he put his hands out, and he let the wind dry them. And he said, Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, of purifiers, I am the wind. So, I mean, that's, if you're really in dire straits, that's what you do. You know, you learn, you take from the Bhagavad Gita. So we definitely get carried away, we get pushed away, and it's amazing. I think we've all been there before we came to Krishna consciousness. Some of us were very big time sense gratifiers. We enjoyed Maya big time, right? And we were carried away by Maya. And what Krishna has to say in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya aparitta jnanam. Maya aparitta jnanam means one of the four kinds of people who have a hard time surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are four kinds of people that find it extremely difficult, right? And that's one of them. When Maya, you let Maya take hold, and you go like this, Maya, take me for a ride. Take me downtown. Take me where the lights are bright. Let's have a good time. So, and Maya will take you for a good time. And then you enjoy the various kinds of what the waves are like in the material nature. Another beautiful image is of the ocean. Krishna also talks about the ocean and desires. You've been to the ocean before? Maybe some of us like to swim in the ocean, right? So when you go into the ocean by the beach, there's always some waves that you want, like a supreme wave to come, you know? You want that big, challenging one. I don't know if you're like that, if you got that. But the big one that's going to come and almost take you away. And then you have the next wave come, it's like, oh, it's like a wimpish wave. Oh, you're no fun. That was no fun. Sometimes I go swimming in my travels to the ocean, and you look back at the wave that was no fun, and then suddenly the next wave comes, oh, and takes you by surprise. So here in the material world, we're always being tossed around by the waves. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also speaks about how we're a little jiva soul, and we're being tossed this way and that way, and you know, everything gets out of control. I remember one of the one of our life members from, I'm not sure if he's from Mumbai, but he used to run a ship, you know, and he had come to visit us in Canada and came for prasadam, and he was telling how when he was on one ship during a storm, one wave took out one of the crew members. One wave took him right out of the vessel into the water, the torrential waters. And then another wave came and splashed him back onto the boat. So you can see how really we're taken for a ride by material nature. And hence, we're engaged. We're engaged with our maya, but as a result, as is mentioned here in this shloka here, there is a struggle. Prakriti stani karshati. We're struggling in a way that we don't need to struggle. Just like Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, you don't need to struggle, you don't need to worry. In fact, he tells Arjuna, don't worry. He says, don't worry, so many times. Especially 1866, Masucha, don't worry, right? But also in chapter 2, he says at least about 9 or 10 times, in that chapter he says, don't worry, because you're thinking about the body. It starts off with Ashochan and Vishochas Twang, Pragya Bhavans Chibasha Se. So do not lament for that which is not worthy of lamenting. Don't worry. Masucha, over and over again, because Arjuna is worried about the material condition. Well, don't worry about the material condition, because it's going to change. You know, chapter 15 from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about change, the body change. Also in chapter 2, and Jatasihi Dhruvam Mrityur Dhruvam Janma Mrityashcha Tasmat Apari Harirti Natvam Sochitam Arasi. Even there he says, don't worry about a thing, because your body will change. So if our body is changing, it's like changing your clothes. I know that in the beginning of the day, I put on some fresh clothes. I put my night clothes to the side. Oh, just like this. And I have my new set of clothes. And it's nothing to get too overly excited about. You know? You don't lament. Don't worry. There's this one doctor I see in Toronto. It's a place where I live. And he's a Gujarati guy. And he doesn't know a stitch of English. He really doesn't. Well, he knows two words. And the words are, don't worry. So he's got some incredible healing powers, you know. And he's from the old school, which means that when you all want to offer some bakshish or whatever, he said, no. So put over there. And it's a little altar. And there's no set price. I kind of like that. That's nice. So he's very gifted, and he looks at you as you're standing up. He points at the problem. Where the problem is, where you're having some tension point or something. Yeah. Ah, then he comes down to another part of the body. That's the source of it. And then he'll get close to you with his hands. It's a, don't worry, with a smile. Don't worry. Like that. So he's got the key words down. Don't worry. Of course, you do have to worry if you're very entrenched in maya. And one time Srila Prabhupada actually said that the problem with my disciples is that they don't fear maya. We've got comfortable with maya. We go to bed with maya and we say, maya, I like you very much. I never want to leave you. Don't ever go anywhere else. You know, this is our... We get comfortable with maya, and and hence we lose touch with reality. You know, we need a reality check. So one interesting thing about Maya pleases, and Maya also gives pain. It's always a pleasure-pain situation. She always gives good kicks. Now, I was raised on a farm, and I used to hand milk the cow every day before I went to school. My dad used to wake me up at 5:30 in the morning, and I would go out into the field and try to see where the milking cow was. And I'd go through the fog and the mist. It'd be dark sometimes. And finally, I'd find her. I'd bring her in. And I'd tie her up with the hind legs. And then, you know, sometimes, depending on which cow we had, because they only last so long, some would be a little jittery, like a little bit jerky, unsure. We would sometimes bring in cows that were very abused, you know, and they'd be very uptight and nervous. So when you go to the udder and just, they'll jump like this, you know. And there would be some times where the cow would just kind of like let loose and put the foot, the hoof, right into the bucket of milk, which spoiled the whole thing, right? So a cow that kicks, it's like dealing with Maya. Maya offers a lot of pleasures, and then it kicks. Hey, what's that all about? I thought you were my friend. Come on, smarten up. You know, like that. We anticipate Maya's going to give a real nice, smooth ride in this world, but actually, it's a road that's full of bumps and sharp stones. Anybody here has done the Govardhan Parikrama? Yes, with bare feet. And if you're not so accustomed going bare feet, there's a stretch where there's little fine sharp stones, and you don't anticipate it's going to be there. So it's a beautiful exercise in understanding what it means to go through the material world. Or I've done some long walks across different countries, and one of the worst things to have happen to you is to have a stone fly into your shoe, and you have your shoelaces on. And then you're hoping that you kind of wiggle your foot around a little bit, hoping it'll just toss out, like even in a sandal. But it does, just kind of rolls around and, oh, ew, oh. And then you have to stop. One of the biggest challenges about walking long distances, when you hit a momentum, you know, of movement, you don't want to stop. You don't want anything to stop you. So that has happened to me many times. I'll be walking and walking, and a stone will fall in and create misery like anything. And I said, okay, I surrender. I'll stop and I'll undo my shoe, release the stone and let it have its liberation. And I carry on like that, you know. So life is a little bit like that. Life is like, in the material world, like having a shoe with a stone rolling inside. So we don't need to worry. But when you come to the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, one of my favorite musical artists, he did one piece. He's a tabla player. He did dontvary.com. And he just plays a tabla. Dontvary.com. So it's so beautiful. We just need to be reminded there is no anguish in this world as long as you're Krishna conscious. That's what Krishna is trying to tell Arjuna. So that, and why shouldn't we? It's so many reasons Krishna gives for this. Because you change your body. And yes, we will die. And that's something to worry about. But then you'll have a new body. Right? I mean, it just follows. Have you ever seen a cat chasing its tail? Have you ever seen a cat? And then he stops and then he goes around the other way, chasing his tail. So in life, it's like that. We're dying and then we're being born. And we're dying and being born. We're kind of like chasing that tail. Yesterday I was at the beach with some of the brahmacharis, and we were watching a dog, and he was tossing the sand, and he was digging a hole, and the devotee next to me, Kalakanta, said, oh, he's looking for Krishna. I doubt it, but anyways, he kept going. And then he did some swirls. He went around three times around. After he dug the hole, he said, what's he doing, you know? After digging, he swirls around, and then he sits down. Okay? So he got comfortable in his little hole, the little seat he made for himself. And he said, ah, I've got it made. My and me are partners. So it's like that. One of the places I stopped to visit in my travels is it's Miami. Now, Miami is an incredible place. The weather is usually pretty nice. You can swim there. You can go visit the Everglades. A lot of money is there. A lot of people are there. A lot of retirees go there. It's the gateway to South America, and from South America, it's the gateway to North America. So people have a good time in Miami. So when you analyze what the word is, Maya, me. Maya, me. Right? So if you want to enjoy sense gratification, it's a great place. It's fantastic. One good thing I learned about being in Miami, myself and a few devotees went to this vegetarian place, and the fellow who's there, the guy who owns the establishment, I learned so much from him. How not to worry, because when you're running a business and it's very busy, you got every reason to be in anxiety. But this guy is a Mr. Schmoozer. He's always smiling. He's always cracking jokes. You know, and he came to our table. What was it he was saying? He said, don't drink and drive, because if you do, it might spill on your clothes. Of course, you know them. So that was the joke. And you just have a good time. You're eating, and you're just watching how he just makes he lights up every anything he touches, boom, it glows, you know. And that's really what a Vaishnava is like. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also explained that a true Vaishnava is one who's like a touchstone. Whatever he comes in contact with turns into gold. No, that's the way a Vaishnava is supposed to be, lighting up everybody. So we don't need to be in the doldrums. We don't need to be sad and forlorn. We don't need to be sad, you know. There's no need for that kind of stuff. One interesting thing I always find about when I come to visit India is that despite the chaos, the trash, the garbage, the noise, the traffic, the clutter, the architectural nightmares, I can go on and on, the stinky smells, you know, still everybody's happy. Everybody's smiling. There's a resilience to India. I was thinking about it as I was walking up the stairs this morning. Why can't India be both? Why can't it be orderly and have that happiness? Why is there happiness and there's also this, you know, like say, dreadfulness? But that's the package deal in the material world. If you go to some Western countries, like some European cities, everything's perfect. We have one place in Canada, it's called Niagara-on-the-Lake. It's a village, and everything's perfect. You practically won't see a wilted leaf. And it's all the tourists go there, and you go on horse and buggy, and you know, every house is different, they're Victorian looking, and it's just like a beautiful, perfect, picture-perfect place, you know. But if you just stick around for a while, you'll understand that there's misery there like any other place. So that's the material world. It is Matra Spashtha Kuntiya Shitoshna Sukadukada Agama Pahino Nitya Tangstatikshu Swabharata. So we learn to tolerate these things, the dualities, because that's what will always be the formula for the material world. And when a devotee sees something negative, he or she will say, well, this is, I have a lesson to learn here right now. I remember on my second walk across Canada, and there was one fellow who drove slowly as soon as he got by. He was in a red pickup truck, and he rolled down the window, and he put his middle finger out. Like in Canada, people don't have the mudra language down very well, you know, when we do puja or dance. But in the Western part of the world, people have a sign language which is not very dignified, which tells you, take a hike, and even worse. So this fellow, he raised a finger on me, and then he drove off really fast. And I thought, I was trying to process this, and I was thinking, coward. If you have something to say to me, come on over. Stand here, we'll talk man to man. You know, like that. So I was very disturbed by this, and I thought, well, why did he do that? But then I converted my being self-pitied to compassion for the person, because whatever he did was simply out of ignorance. And I also kind of resolved the whole simple matter into thinking, well, usually it's like the waves on the ocean. You get a real terrible wave coming at you, and then you get a nice one, a soft one. So probably the next thing will happen, a nice wave will come. So sure enough, like 3 minutes later, there's a voice from the distance. Hello! 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 You must be very thirsty doing all that walking, walking, walking. And then I turned around, and it's someone who was standing at the edge of their front yard. Said, come on over, I'll give you some juice, juice, juice. Okay, so it was like God saying, come on over, you had a bad few minutes or seconds, and now God. So that's the way it is in the material world. It's going to be good and bad and good and bad. It's never going to be just a pleasant ride. So anticipate it. Expect that it will come like that. So this is what's happening. Sometimes we get a body which we like. Sometimes we don't. Some of us are proud of our bodies, right? When you're young and you cut some good features, you look in the mirror, right? The guys go like this and like that, right? And the girls do something different. They're looking. So, I mean, it's all bodily conscious, but we think I'm doing very good. But after 10 years, everything starts to sag and it doesn't look so nice anymore, you know. And so we're hit again, once again, by the dualities of material existence. So it's a matter of acceptance. Devotees learn to accept reality. And that reality is that it's not all good here. I can remember on my first walk across Canada, there was one Punjabi man that I met at a gas station. He was running the fueling station. And we had a little chit-chat. And, he was of the opinion, like we were both analyzing the way the world is now. It's all plummeting down. Morality is going down, so on like that. So he was saying to me, Prabhu, anything old, good. Anything new, bad. So I just remember that sticks in my head so well. Of course, I wouldn't totally agree with him that there are many things today that are quite good. And if you look at the more old conservative times, there was a lot of prejudices. There was a lot, I remember growing up in Canada, very close to a place called Uncle Tom's Cabin, which was a symbol of freedom for black slaves that left America and they came into Canada for their freedom. That was in the mid-1800s. So I remember, people had these prejudices. I have a relative who was very derogatory towards Afro people, and it stuck in my head. I don't think that's right, So in the 60s, we kind of grew up being very open and free, like everyone's okay, everybody's all right, regardless of the skin color or your creed or gender, etc. So we were becoming kind of liberal and so on, and the conservatism was going. We were leaving it behind. Now the problem with that being liberal is that anything goes, and all kinds of nonsense comes into the doorway. So there are some virtues behind conservatism, and there's some virtues behind liberalism. And I had to think about this quite a few times. And I would say, Srila Prabhupada, what was he? Well, he was both liberal and conservative. He came to the West and he saw how things are done a little different. And he said that he saw that women have a little more freedom. He said, oh yes, you can go on the altar. Our dear, wonderful Malati helped in that area. things are done a little differently. And so there wasn't so much prejudice. There was a little more equality. And so Prabhupada allowed for these things. At the same time, he put his foot down and he said, these principles we will follow and we will not compromise in these areas. So that's the way he was. It's quite nice. Prabhupada was very much like in the middle. And when you look at we were talking about the laws of nature. What are they? How many of them are there? Three. And sattvagun, rajagun, tamagun. Okay? And sometimes we're very much influenced by tamagun. Even in the temple, you know, complex. For instance, maybe we didn't have enough sleep. So we're tired, and maybe during the class we're dozing off. And I won't take offense if someone here does doze off during my class. So we're in ignorance, right? It's not a good place to be. Sometimes we're super passionate. I've got to get my prasadam. I've got to get my gulab jamuns. I've got to get it. I've got it. Like if that becomes your main objective in life, then okay, hopefully you'll get that passion out of your system. But sattvagun is a very good place to be. One thing, when I was finishing my first walk across Canada, somebody from the CBC came. CBC means Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. If you get CBC to come to you and interview you, it's a big deal. It's like a prestigious situation. So this woman came, and she came with a tape recorder. Do you remember those things? Maybe tape recorders, they're like antique pieces now. And she was asking all kinds of questions like, when did you start the walk? I told her April, in mid-April. And why are you walking? Well, it's to promote spiritual awareness, you know, for spiritual healing for the nation. I said, well, how many pairs of shoes have you worn? I said, well, I'm on my fourth pair of shoes. I was nearing the end. And she asked all the questions, and then she asked one question. At the end, she says, okay, now that you're almost finished the walk, you only have about 3 days left, what was the greatest moment that happened on your walk? So she was excited. She wanted to hear. And at that time, I was sort of baffled. I said, I don't know. What was the greatest thing that happened? I couldn't remember. Was it the bear encounters? What was it? Near-death experiences? Somebody trying to run me off the road or something like that? I just couldn't think. I just went blank. I was stage fright. And then it dawned on me, well, the greatest thing that happened on this walk was I'm standing here and you're standing there and you're asking me this question. That's the greatest thing that happened on this walk. And immediately she picked up on it. She perked, oh, yes, I understand what you're saying. Living for the moment. So that's a very common expression in the English language now. Living for the moment. That means value what's there now. Do not live too much in the past thinking about what I lost. You know, sometimes people come to us, they come and they're very forlorn. So is everything okay? Yeah, it's all right. So what's going on? Well, I just lost my girlfriend, blah, blah, blah. Like that. Those kinds. So people lament about these kind of things. Don't live too much there. Don't live in the past too much. Also, do not be too futuristic. Do not live too much far, you know, with your desires and dreams. You know, have your feet a little bit on the ground. Don't have your head too much in the clouds. It's a dangerous place to be. The best thing is to be in the middle. Sattvagun. Because then you can see the two extremes. Passion and ignorance. When you're walking in the middle of a trail, you can see what's going on here and going on over there. But if you're way over on this end of the trail, you can't understand everything that's going on there. Or in this end, you can't understand. So in sattvagun, when we live that, when we exercise the behavior of a perfect person, which is mentioned here, living in goodness, then there's insightfulness. Then you can see there's foresight. You know, and based on experience from the past. But you don't live too much in those two places. Very much live in the present. So that's what it means, be in sattvagun. And in sattvagun, to be sattvic, is the good launching pad, the only launching pad, practically, for vishuddha sattva, which means transcendence. Right? Unless, save and except, you're somebody like Jagai or Madai. Do we have any Jagadis or Madais here from the past? Any Jagais and Madais? Prabhu, you put your hand up. He's the only honest man here. Put up your hand. He's the only honest person here. Jagai and Madai, what does it mean? Now we're being honest. We did a bunch of nonsense before, right? So when we come to Krishna consciousness, does the switch turn off right away? for all the Maya that we are involved in. No, it kind of lingers. It stays inside. Prabhupada was walking with some of the devotees, I think it was in Boston, and they were looking at a storefront, and there were, you know, some images of war and G.I. Joe's, little figurines of, you know, army men, you know. And one devotee remarked, Prabhupada, these images stay with us. Will they be with us for a long time? And Prabhupada confirmed, yes, they will stay with you for a long time. But the thing is that we need to fill up our life and our day with as much as possible with Krishna conscious activities. That means to do it very much with the heart and not to be mechanical about it. Where do we get mechanical? When we chant japa, isn't it? Isn't it? We might as well be a motor. And we're just not conscious of what we're saying and what we're doing. We're all guilty. We're all guilty of this. So getting away from the mechanical side and putting in a heart, your heart into it. After all, even a real nice souped up car and as with a good engine, it looks great. But if you can't drive it anywhere, what's the use of it? You sometimes see these guys, they've got these old models, and they drive down, you know, they know everyone's gawking and looking, you know, and that's just what they want, you know. But it's not so much about the car, it's about the person in the car that matters. I think maybe the person is looking for a little attention, that's all. Looking for a little love, and way deep down inside, we're all looking for Krishna is what it is. Yes. And of course, on the more sattvic aspect, we do have to be nice to each other. Like security has to be nice with people, not push people, you know, and push ladies and things like, you know, it has to be, I'm saying this because I see it happen, okay? And, you know, we have to be nice to each other. And we have to understand different things. I live in Canada, and sometimes we have boys come from India to help us with our puja, and they have mannerisms that are not understood all the time by Westerners. They say, come this way, they go, and, you know, if you look from afar, it means, get out of here, get out, get out. You know, you just have to understand different cultural things. I walked Ireland, and I'd wave sometimes to motorists. And in Ireland, they do this thing. And when I first saw that, I said, get the hell out of here. It's because there's cultural differences. So that, like in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, there's all kinds of different cultural habits and norms. And, you know, we should just get a little more in touch with them. And, of course, do not mimic or do not, copy, Xerox copy, the bad habits, the bad behavior. But copy what's good, you know. You know, do not imitate the bad, but imitate the good, isn't it? There's a lot of bad behavior out there. And pretty people are pretty obnoxious. It's shocking sometimes, you know, what goes on the billboards. And you'll see it sometimes, oh, it can't get worse than that. And then next month, a new thing gets slapped onto the billboard. It is worse. It is worse. It's getting worse, you know. So Kali Yuga is definitely going full speed ahead. And while that polarization is happening, we need to polarize ourselves the other way and get very serious about our Krishna consciousness. Huh? What do you think? Okay. Now, we're not suggesting that anybody should go down in the yard and lie down like the Python Man and wait for chapatis to come. You know, it's not going to work out that way, you know. But it's through the area of devotion, of service. And service means detachment. Sarvopadi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam sevanam pati uchite. So, it is like there's two things that happen. When you increase your bhakti, then you decrease the selfishness, okay? And selfishness is not something that we want. Selfish. Remember, Prabhupada said, no meat, fish and eggs. So we don't eat fish. And the worst one of all, selfish. Okay, we don't eat selfish. Okay, to be selfish, to be self-centered. Rather to be Krishna-centric, sadhu, guru-centric. see what the saintly persons want, and then I have a chance. So, anyways, thank you very much. I think that bell meant something, or yeah, it's 9 o'clock. So, do we have any questions or comments or feedback? I mean, we're about to eat, right? So, therefore, that term is very appropriate. Feedback. You can give me your feedback. Did we do okay? Was it all right? Okay. You have a question for me? Hare Krishna Prabhu.
So, you told to live in the present, not live in the past so much, and in the future also. So, can you give more tips on how to live in the present?
How do we live in the present and not so much in the past and the future? Well, I think it's very important to, when you're taking steps, to do take a step into the past. I'm not saying you shouldn't, or into the future. Make plans for your life. But spend a lot of quality time in the present. Meaning, be attentive to what you're doing. You know, pay attention to the details. We have one of our ladies in Vancouver, in Canada. She had a kind of big position in what's called the body shop, where they sell all kinds of ointments and soaps and things like that. And she's very good at what she does. And she's a good retail salesperson, right? She said, retail means detail, you know? So if you want to make a profit, and make a profit in life, then you pay attention to the detail. Details count. Where everything's supposed to be placed, it should be clean, should be tidy, you know? New arrivals, put them out in the front, you know? You know, stir it up a little bit like that. So pay attention to details. Be conscious of what you're doing right now. That's what we mean by living very much in the present. Be conscious. And Prabhupada said, first be conscious, and then you can be Krishna conscious. Right? So just like I noticed that in a lot of our communities, we make a lot of garbage. Make a lot of garbage. Some of the garbage that's not very biodegradable and so on like that. And we could be a little more conscious. We could be a little more sensitive to nature. And cut down on the output of trash, you know, be nice to Mother Nature, so on like that. That means to be conscious, to be conscientious, or to be conscious. And then, when we're very sattvic like that, then it's much easier to slide in to home base at Krishna's lotus feet. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Sense objects enters into mind, and mind, I mean, they have a major relationship. So, in other words, our mind, we cannot concentrate upon transcendence. So, mind is attached to sense objects. So, how is it possible that, to practice exclusive devotional service exclusively?
Partially it's the accent, partially it's the echo. Could you repeat that, or somebody, like, real simple? I couldn't understand. I couldn't hear the echo and the accent.
Sense objects enters into mind
enters into the mind,
and mind means they have a mutual relationship. They always enters into each other. So in other words, we cannot concentrate upon transcendence, which are transcendentally
right.
Situated.
Okay.
So a person who is trying to become liberated, to become fully Krishna consciousness, so how he can execute devotional service exclusively?
So basically you're saying, how can we get serious, focused, even though the mind is very agitated? Okay. Bhagavad Gita. Do we have it here? Look, check 17:16. Look at that verse. Because it has a lot to do with how to address the nature of the mind. Okay? So, austerity of the mind, simplicity, lead that simple life. That's number one. Prabhupada is also suggesting, fill your mind with positive thoughts. And Prabhupada is talking about, immerse yourself in beautiful stories that are captivating. Stories from the Mahabharata and so on, and the Puranas. and immerse yourself in those details, because it's very captivating. And once you do that, it steers your mind away from all the negative things. Okay? So, the best course says, engage the mind in so many different ways for sense gratification is what people are involved in. And so there's no possibility of the mind to becoming satisfied. So you want the mind to be satisfied. The best course is to divert the mind, and that's a deliberate effort that you have to make. Divert the mind to Vedic literature, which are full of satisfying stories, as in the Puranas and the Mahabharata. One can take advantage of this knowledge and thus become purified. Right? So this is really, it's a solution. You know? Okay? So divert your mind. Take it away from wherever the mind wanders due to its unsteady nature, Krishna says. Grab it and bring it back under the control of the self. It's just like anybody who is parenting. They have children, you know, and children are wonderful objects of joy. But they go off into a danger area, they're getting too close to the heart, and you go and grab that child and bring them back, you know, to an area zone of safety. So the mind is like that. It's like a wild child. It's like a monkey. It's all over the place. It's like a clown. It's a rascal. Now you got to get control of the rascal, otherwise it'll eat you. Another example, the lion. I know Revati Raman, you know, he took me to the zoo in Tirupati, you know, and we went to the lion den, you know. I can still remember it. I got really close. So, you know, if you have I was safe because they were behind bars, right? They were behind bars. I remember one alpha male came like this with his nail, and I just went like this on his fingernail like this, and I knew I was taking a little bit of risk, but I wasn't going to stay there too long, you know. So I mean, it's like that. So when your mind is in a cage, when it's entrapped, then you're safe. And how is that done practically? Pay attention to details, get into the stories, you know, immerse yourself into positive devotional services. And also, be a little bit dreamy, be a little creative. Well, how can I do my service a little better? Creativity is allowed, you know. We have two parts to the brain. One is a very practical side, analytical side. The other one is more creative. Activate both of them. Let them both be alive. And then your brain is happy. Everybody wants a happy brain, right? It's a big muscle. Everybody wants a big muscle, right? And so keep it alive. Does that answer the question okay? All right. Anything else? Well, I want to thank you very much for listening. It's my last day here in Mumbai, and I will be flying off to where I came from. But thank you, and I wish you well in your devotional efforts, and that you will make lots of spiritual advancement. May you prosper spiritually. Hare Krishna. So let's do one last mantra right now. Okay, all we have to do is put our heads down to the floor, just like the plane is doing. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhivacha patitanang pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha vaishnavebhyo namo namaha vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much.